Hello, I'm George Potter. Welcome to Gospel Tangents.
George Potter has lived in the Middle East for 26 years. In our next episode, he'll talk about what it's like to travel among the Bedouins and the Arabs. It's going to be a very interesting conversation. I think you'll learn a lot. We'll trace Lehi's trail along the Frankincense Trail. It's going to be pretty interesting. Please check it out. I also want to point out that our latest transcript is available with Dr. Bill Smith on Doctrine and Covenants 132. So please check that out. Special sale. Only you guys know about it, so it's not going to last long. But if you'd like to get a copy, it's a really good deal this week. So check it out on our Amazon page. Now back to our conversation.
Since we found what we believe to be the Valley of Lemuel, we've been back there. I've been back there probably 10 times. Other LDS have gone there. And it's just a beautiful place. It's very isolated. It's pristine. There's no buildings in it or anything like that. And so we've been back many, many times and have been able to, you know, document through film and through just searching around there that there are altar pieces there. There are a campsite that dates back to the Iron Age. In that area, the Iron Age is mid-first millennium B.C. That's been documented by archaeologists from the United States, that the campsite, they call it an encampment in that valley, dates back to the same time as Lehi. So this is amazing. And I think, is that Lehi's camp? Maybe. Is that the altar they made where they gave thanks to the Lord? Was it the altar on top of the hill? Is that the altar that Moses made? Who knows? But it's really a fascinating place. It's a beautiful canyon. And so, it meets all the attributes that are described in the Book of Mormon. It empties to the Red Sea. The campsite that they would have been at when they camped there, the river would have gone through there. Lehi would not have known that it emptied into the Red Sea, because the canyon winds through, then opens up to the Red Sea, all of a sudden the Gulf of Aqaba. So it fits perfectly. You could not see the Red Sea from where they camped. Because it says, and when my father discovered that the river emptied into the Red Sea. I mean, it's a perfect match for the, and it's the perfect distance into the wilderness, 3 days camel ride. Because if you look at any history of that time, any records, the uncivilized world, the wilderness started at the northern end of the Gulf of Aqaba. Because where the northern end of Aqaba was, either Egypt or Mesopotamia ruled that area and controlled it. But then you went into Arabia, the desert was known as the wilderness. So that would have been 3 day camel ride, 75 miles in, you come to the valley. It's perfect in terms of all its attributes.
So as I understand it, with kind of with your theory, you believe that Lehi followed kind of the frankincense trail and then ended up, well, I should let you tell, but is that basically, so this is part of the frankincense trail, is that correct?
Well, the Valley of Lemuel is off the main trail.
Okay.
Okay. The thing is, it's very important that we found a canyon that's made of pure granite. It should be a national park. It's like Zion's. It's just amazing, this canyon. It should be a national park. And it's gorgeous, but it's not on the trail. And there's a river running through it, a small creek. Because as Hugh Nibley pointed out, the River of Laman had to have been a very insignificant river of water. Because in the Middle East, any water at all, river, is a tremendous resource. It's a desert. It would have been known. So it had to be something very small, insignificant, and away from where people were, or would have been known to people. Between the valley and Mount Sinai was the western branch of the famous Frankincense Trail that ran through the whole west side of Arabia, was the Frankincense Trail. So Jeremiah wrote about it, Ezekiel wrote about the Frankincense Trail. So obviously anybody in Lehi's time would have known about the Frankincense Trail. Lehi was probably a merchant, because he knew the different languages. So we figure he was probably a rich merchant, and that he would have certainly known about the trade routes. That would have been like today, going from L.A. to Salt Lake, you take I-15. That was the only freeway at the time. In fact, the only trail at the time. So we believe that he went down the Frankston's Trail. I was pretty much living in Arabia. I didn't have a huge library with me, so I didn't have a lot of the resources people would normally use to study this Lehi's trail before that. But I'd come up with the, just by talking to Arabs, I'd say, look, if it was 2,000 years ago, how would somebody have traveled from Aqaba to Oman? And they'd say, well, they would have taken the trail. The trail. There's only one trail. Or did they go down the shoreline? No, there's no trail there. There's no wells there. They would have had to have gone down the old Frankincense Trail. That's where they dug the wells to support the trade. That's where the agricultural communities grew up, to support the trade. The Frankincense Trade was the, we call it the OPEC of its time. It was the source of great wealth. Frankincense was worth more than its weight in gold in Lehi's time. So the communities made lots of money by supporting this trade. So when you think about a caravan back then that went down, got frankincense, and took it up to the Mediterranean and sold it in Rome, Greece, and Cairo, Damascus, Babylonia, at these times, these caravans were not made up of 100 camels. They were 3,000, 4,000 camels at a time. They were huge, like an army moving back and forth. And this way they could protect themselves as well. But one temple in Baghdad or Babylonia at that time, they used more than 3,000 pounds of frankincense per year. So you're talking about a huge amount of frankincense moving back and forth along this trail. And so people were making money, especially the local Arab tribes, would charge 25% tariff every time they went through a different territory on the trail. So when the frankincense grew in Oman, by the time it reached the Mediterranean, it was worth more than gold, because all along the way it was taxed by the different ones. You want to cross our territory? Fine, but you have to pay us a toll, and we'll protect you as well. So, you know, people, when I went to seminary as a kid, we kind of had this paradigm that Lehi kind of snuck his way through Arabia, avoiding people, because it never talks about people in the Book of Mormon, having them meeting anybody. But if you look at the literature at that time, nobody talked about insignificant characters in their writings. You only talked about their principles. You didn't talk about the women. You didn't talk about the children. You didn't talk about people you met. Only the principal characters were ever in the literature at the time. So the Book of Mormon was like Elijah going from Palestine down to Mount Sinai. He never mentions meeting anybody. But of course he met people. In fact, it says, you know, that the crows fed him, right? Or the ravens fed him. Well, the word for raven in Arab is almost exactly the same, so it's definitely a misinterpretation. The Arabs fed Elijah when he went down to Arabia. He was fed by the Arabs, not the birds. Okay.
Oh, really? That makes more sense.
And it talks about the fact that angels cooked bread on coals. Well, when we went to meet those Arabs who showed us the wrong Mount Sinai, they prepared bread for us on coals. It was like something right out of the Old Testament. It was incredible. Mm-hmm. You know, they baked the bread right on top of the coals. So it was tremendous. Anyway, going down the Frankincense Trail, there's only one trail. And people had misinterpreted for a long time what was meant by the valley was in the borders nearer the Red Sea. There are two sets of mountains in Arabia. The word for Jabal, or mountain, is Jabal, which in Hebrew means borders. Okay, so when you read anything in the Book of Mormon, it says they were in the borders. They're talking about they're in the mountains. And the valley was not in the mountains where Sinai was, but it was in the borders that were nearer the Red Sea, the ones that went right into the Red Sea, where the valley is located today. So there's two mountain ranges in Midian. You can see that, again, on your LDS maps, the 1967 version. You can see there's two mountain ranges. The valley is one that's next to the Red Sea, the Gulf of Aqaba. Sinai is in the other mountain range, the one that's a little bit further inland. So the people interpreted, misinterpreted borders, thinking somehow it meant the beach or the water. And so, in fact, the mountains there are called the Hajjaj, or the borders in Arabic. So they thought that they went down the Red Sea. Well, there were no wells down the Red Sea. The Romans tried to do it, and they lost their whole legion going down the Red Sea to try to get to the frankincense. They wanted to control the frankincense. And the whole legion perished by starvation, going down in thirst, trying to go down the Red Sea. The old trail went on the east side of these mountains, where the aquifer were, where the wells were. That's where the trail went. There was no trail before 900 AD along the shoreline. So the only way Lehi could have gone was down that trail. Also, the fact that Lehi had to have met people. There's no way you can sneak through Arabia. You have to go to where the water is. So a camel can you maybe carry 3 days worth of water, 4 days worth of water, and then you got to get to a well, okay? And they need to eat too, by the way, camels. So they had to go to these agricultural communities where the wells were. So the local Arab tribes would dig a well in the aquifer, sell the water to the travelers, make money, okay? Charge them a tax to go on the trail, pass the land, and also would provide them fresh camels, fodder, other provisions that they needed. Nephi wrote that they were in the wilderness for 8 years. And that's because they're a family, they're traveling together, they're traveling alone. They'd have to go from one of these agricultural communities to the next one, you know, once they had a group of people they could travel with. But they would not travel alone, it'd be too dangerous. So they'd probably wait till there's a group of people, then they'd go to the next town, then the next town. In the summers, they could not travel at all. You die. It's 120, 130 degrees temperature. Nobody travels down that trail. So it took them 8 years to go down the trail. Well, in 8 years, how many children did they have? How many camels did they have needed? You just think of yourself having young children. You know, how many pairs of tennis shoes do they need? Okay, in 8 years. They had to have gone and gotten provisions. They couldn't have just wandered off somewhere because they would die. Every one of the wells was guarded by a fort where you had to pay for your money. So they had to have met people as they went through Arabia. Lynn Hilton was the first one to point out to me where in section 33 of the Doctrine and Covenants, it talks about Nephi being a missionary as they came down from Jerusalem into the wilderness. So obviously, a prophet of God doesn't hide from people. A prophet of God wants to get a hold of people and tell them the truth. And so, you know, Lehi and Nephi certainly were converting people as they went through Arabia. And it tells you that in the Doctrine and Covenants, section 33, verses 7 through 9. All right? So they were actually meeting people as they went through Arabia, going to these different oases. And that way they had water and all the provisions they needed to go through there. Well, how did they pay for it? How did they pay for permission to go down the trail? Well, certainly, you think about the context of it. You know, they left their great wealth up in Jerusalem. But certainly, if you're going somewhere, you're going to take a credit card with you, right? And some cash, you know, if you're going to travel somewhere. So I'm sure they took some gold or whatever with them for barter. Coins were just coming in at that time, so they probably didn't have coinage. But they would go down through these towns. Now, I've been in Saudi Arabia for 26 years as a teacher. They respect me because I come from a different culture. I can teach their young managers how to be better leaders. So what you have with Lehi? Lehi spoke several languages. Nephi did as well. He was literate. He was a spiritual leader. He was a sheikh from Jerusalem. He had information. Certainly, anywhere he would have gone in Arabia, he would have been a valuable commodity. It's interesting, when the first European explorers would come into Arabia, they would know about their arrival weeks ahead of time, because news would travel between the Bedouins. You know, they'd spy and they'd say, you know, there's a group coming in. They're from somewhere up in the north. There's three women with them. They have 20 camels. There's five men. They have rifles. They have, you know, they knew all this information. Lehi would have been known along the trail as a great sheikh coming from the north, a leader. He would have been absolutely the guest of the emir in these towns. Like I said, when we travel, we had to avoid meeting Arabs or Bedouins. Because if they meet you, the law of the desert says they have to host you for 3 days in their tents. They had to feed you. Okay? It's called the bond of salt. And what do they want in return? They want news. What's happening in the world out there? Tell us about Jerusalem. You know, are the Egyptians still giving the Babylonians a bad time? You know, what's going on here? You know, is Ezekiel still the king? So it was a two-way thing. But that's the way people survive in the desert. They help each other. It's required by their culture. And it still exists today. If a Bedouin sees you, he wants to feed you. He wants you to stay with him, tell you all about where you're from, and all this sort of thing. So certainly Lehi could have said, look, I'll teach your kids how to read. I'll teach them how to speak Egyptian. I'll teach them how to, you know, speak Hebrew, whatever they were speaking at the time. He would have been a scholar. Very few people at that time knew how to read or write. Maybe one out of 10,000, if you're lucky, could read or write at that period of time. So the emir would have said, please be in our home. While you're here, could you teach my son how to be a merchant? Could you teach him a foreign language, teach him how to read and write? So it would have been no problem for him to have been able to have paid his way, worked his way down. A normal caravan could make it from Jerusalem to Oman in about 4 months. They travel in the winter months. They actually try to come back at the same time. It took them 8 years. So they were probably stopping, converting people, working to get passage to afford to go down there. So the trail was the only trail they could have taken. So it's not like we can speculate, where did they travel? You know, well, you can come up with any idea you want, but if you talk to an Arab, he'll tell you they took the trail. Okay. Oh, okay. Otherwise, they would have perished. And besides, if they would have wandered off on their just in the middle of nowhere, they would have been killed. Mm-hmm. Okay. You do not travel in Arabia at that time without getting permission from the local tribes to cross their territory. That was their country at the time. You just cannot wander through our country. If you're wandering through our country without asking us permission, you must have bad intent. You must be an enemy.
Okay.
They would attack you, kill you, and then they would sell the women as slaves.
I hope you enjoyed our conversation with George. In our next conversation, we'll take a left turn and look for the land Bountiful. George talks about the stark contrast of the area there.
But they're a very hot, desolate desert. 20 miles from the Red Sea, where the trail turns then and heads to the Red Sea, turns south. You have a little mountain range, some coastal hills you have to go across. 20 miles from the Red Sea, it's completely barren. You go over those mountains, you come down, and you think you're in Scotland. If it's after the monsoon season, it's completely green, wildflowers everywhere, trees everywhere. You think you're in a jungle, and it's really, really just shocking, the difference. And you have there in the Book of Mormon, they came to a land bountiful where there's much fruit and wild honey. The only place that honey was native in all of Arabia is right there in Oman.
Thank you so much for listening. Make sure that you like our page on facebook.com/gospeltangents. You can subscribe at YouTube at youtube.com/gospeltangents. We're also on Twitter at gospeltangents, as well as make sure that you subscribe on iTunes so you don't miss any of our episodes. Thanks again for listening. Click here to subscribe, here for a transcript, and over here you'll see some more of our videos. Thanks again.